Morning, everyone. Thank you very much for taking the time to come and attend our half-year's presentation. I must say it's really nice to be back presenting face-to-face, particularly when the results are pretty good face-to-face when hiding behind the phone. But a welcome, nevertheless, to those who couldn't make it in person. So I'm Steve Burns, Chief Exec. I'll be taking you through the key financial and operational highlights that we've experienced during the half. I'll also touch on the small amount of COVID impact that we have on the period under review. I'm joined by Laurence, our CFO, who will take you through the numbers and provide some commentary on risk mitigation. And we'll close the meeting with a summary, brief outlook, and then do our best to answer any questions that you might have for us. So turning to the presentation, looking at the H1 22 highlights, the first half of the financial year has been a record period for the group, and we are delighted with the performance. We had total revenue of 91.3 million in the half, which is a record number, which is like-for-like sales growth of 26.8%. And that's obviously versus the last normalised period of trading in 2019. Average spend per game, £10.52. We closed the period with 49.6 million of net cash. Group adjusted EBITDA of 31 million and a profit before tax of £24.8 million. Really pleased to announce that we'll be reinstating our dividend, so we're paying 3 pence per share. Just a reminder, it's 50% profit after tax on a 1/3, 2/3 split. So 3 pence per share divvy for the first half, off the back of £100 million of staff revenue and £27 million of profit after tax. Just a little bit on COVID on slide four. Other than in Scotland, all COVID restrictions were removed during the period under review. And other than a really small levelling off of demand when the Omicron variant took hold and government guidance changed, mainly around Christmas parties, really, that we saw a very small impact to trade. The biggest challenges really were around team absence, which we'll touch on a little bit later in the presentation. Whilst some customers very quickly returned to their pre-COVID behaviour, there was still a large amount of people, particularly our elderly and special needs groups, that were still nervous about returning to indoor leisure venues. And so the staged removal of the COVID protocols that we had in place were appreciated. We've retained the high quality lane dividers we installed during the height of the pandemic. And based on the feedback from our customers, actually people really like them, we've just refined the process, reduced the height of them a little bit, but still kept them in place for the new site openings and the refurbishments that we've done. I suppose looking at the results, an obvious question would be, is this a structural change to profit and demand? So in the period post-lockdowns, it's worth reminding ourselves, trade levels were bolstered significantly by a lack of other options from our customers. They were restricted to UK holiday destinations. There was weak cinema product. Smaller operators of indoor leisure-based businesses were slow to reopen. And the weather, if you cast your mind back, was really favourable for indoor leisure experiences in that there was quite a lot of rain around. Customers were also really well funded. There were low levels of personal debt, and back then there was really low inflation. We did a fantastic job during that period, capitalising on the opportunities this presented us, and we showcased our product to customers that hadn't visited us for a number of years. Now, that all helped us deliver the record results that I talked about on the earlier slide. And whilst I'm confident that there is a structural move towards experiential leisure by our core customer group, that the COVID pandemic has undoubtedly accelerated, using 2019 as a benchmark to grow our business from is, to me, the most sensible way of forward forecasting performance for the remainder of FY22 and then going forward into FY23. In other COVID-related news, thanks to the very hard work and dogged determination of members of the Tenpin Bowling Proprietors Association, which was led by Anthony, the CFO of Ten Entertainment, we're really grateful to receive the correct recognition by HMRC and receive the VAT concessions that all other leisure operators got. It's not insubstantial either in terms of what we're getting back. We are claiming back £5.8 million in cash for the prior year and £3 million in cash for the current year. And over to Laurence to talk through the numbers.
So on slide six, we just talked through the financial performance over the last 4 years. So 3 years, and also in some of the metrics. So it's pleasing to see revenues, as Steve mentioned, of 91.3 million. Now that is statutory revenue of 100.2 million, which includes the reduced rate of VAT claim, as Steve just mentioned. The 91.3 is up 36.3% on the same period in 2019 and up a massive 660% versus H1 last year for anybody that's looking for a comparative to FY21. The growth versus 19 was driven through like-for-like growth, 26.8%, plus the continued strong performance of the new centres. This strong trading performance, coupled with our usual discipline on costs, led to a record group adjusted EBITDA on a pre-IFRS 16 basis of 31 million. And it is worth just saying that all of the commentary that we go through today will be excluding the reduced rate of VAT unless otherwise specified. Okay. The EBITDA margin was 34%. Statutory operating profit, which includes the reduced rate of VAT, was up 12.8 percentage points to 37.8. And statutory EPS was 15.82 pence per share. And excluding the VAT, it was 11.96 pence per share. As you can see on slide 7, the like-for-like performance was driven through different areas. So we saw game volumes were up 18.1% versus FY2019 on a like-for-like basis, as customers continue to seek value family leisure activities. Whilst average spend was up 7.5% to £10.52. Now it's just worth, again, just splitting out this VAT benefit. For prior periods, it's worth 5.8 million on revenue. And for this year, it's worth 3 million. So in total, 8.8 million. And from a PBT perspective, it's worth 8.6 million. And from an earnings perspective, it's worth 6.6 million because all of it is subject to corporation tax. Whilst there was a marginal VAT benefit on other areas for food and non-alcoholic drinks, as you can see from the waterfall, this was only worth 1.1 million, which is 1.6% on the like-for-like. Post that VAT benefit on food and drink, average spend grew 5.8%. Now, to put it into context, the average bowling price only increased by an effective 1.7 percentage points versus 2019. Food revenues were up 8.4% despite an average menu price reduction versus 2019 of 10.9%. So volumes were up over 18% in terms of food. And our successful amusements investment, along with the marginally longer wait times due to increased utilisation of the lanes, amusement revenues were up 43.6% on a like-for-like basis. Now, the top 4 months ever recorded were in the first half, and whilst all months were strong, it's just worth wanting to pull out February, which was 17.7 million, the second highest revenue month after August of 2021. Now, the reason I want to pull it out is that we saw something we hadn't seen in a long time, which is where half term in February is sometimes split over 2 weeks. This was not just a north and south divide, this was an inter-county, inter-city divide, and therefore for a capacity constrained business like ours, this is a panacea. And in our view, it's worth putting this benefit out because it was worth about 2.3 million to the month. For the first half, the average revenue for a like-for-like centre was a record £1.45 million. Now onto the income statement on slide 8. We do split out here, as you can see from the first column, the statutory numbers. However, the references to the movement on FY19 are all versus the second column, which excludes all of the VAT bowling benefit. Gross profit margin was down 80 bits versus FY19, but that was absolutely in line with our expectations given the revenue mix and growth. Bar GP margin and food GP margins were within 20 basis points of FY19, but it was the strong growth of amusements, as I mentioned just before, which was up 43.6%, whilst bowling was up 23.6%, obviously, the lower margin on amusements means that there's slightly lower GP margin, but significantly higher GP pounds, which is where we always focus our time and effort. Overall admin costs, excluding depreciation and amortization, were up 4.3 million, and the largest increase was in employee costs, which were up 3.1 million. Of that 3.1, 1.7 of it was like-for-like centres, and that was due to both rate increase in terms of pay rates versus 2019, because you've got the compound effect of 2 and 3 years, and also higher revenues and therefore more labour. The balance of the increase on employee cost increases was to do with new centre openings at 1.4 million. Total property costs accounted for under pre-IFRS 16 with 15.5 million, only an increase of half a million, and actually like-for-like centres were backwards by 1.9 million, and that's to do with the rates movement. Obviously, rates have now returned as of April 2022. Alongside all other costs, energy costs continue to be a focus for the group. As a reminder, electricity costs are hedged to the end of FY 2024, and we're currently paying around 30% of the market value. We continue to work closely with our landlords to install solar on more centres. 8 are now benefiting from solar panels, with 7 more planned before the end of the year. Now, corporate costs include all central costs as well as the outperformance bonus for our centres. Total corporate costs increased by 5.9 million when compared to FY19. The main driver of this was this outperformance from our centres, and we've accrued a record 3 million in the first half for outperformance bonuses for our centres. Now, this is testament to the hard work commitment of our amazing central teams across the estate. The other increases have been within marketing spend, and also a few more heads in our support centre as we continue to expand our reach and invest within our teams. All of this led to a record group adjusted EBITDA pre-IFRS 16, as I mentioned before, of 31 million, at a margin of 34%. And the average centre level EBITDA for half one was a record £661,000. Finance costs continue to benefit from the low margin rate on the unutilised RCF. And obviously, while it remains unutilised, we are not affected by any movements within the Bank of England base rate or the SONIA rate. With an effective tax rate of 17.7% due to the super deduction, earnings were 20.4 million excluding the VAT benefit at an EPS of 11.96 pence a share. Now, we wanted to set out on slide 9, as Steve mentioned earlier, around inflationary pressures on the cost profile of the business. And one of the best ways we think to do that is to present how the costs currently look as a percent of revenue, and then the key areas of potential impact on our plans for managing this. Now, as you can see from the graph, the highest percent to sales is payroll at 17.5%. And this is increased in line with expectations, an increase on a pound basis of 5.8% in the past year. We're forecasting a similar increase into FY 2023. And we continued with our team member hourly incentive scheme during the year, whereby hourly team members are rewarded for hitting target data control, so upsells, waste recycling, and also service metrics. And we paid this out 60% of all of our team members during the year. Now, that equates to an incremental amount over and above their pay of an extra 6%. The next largest cost is property costs at 16.9%. Now, this does include electricity and energy, as we've mentioned previously. Now, of this 16.9%, 7 percentage points of it is rent. And rent, in the main, is based on an open market value for bowling use and therefore subject to very minimal increases. But we do have some centres where their rent increases are based on CPI. So before everyone gasps in the room, we are cap and collared at a 1%, 4% on that. So we're not subject to large increases as we go forward. Finally, other commodity cost increases. Now, it's worth just noting, as Steve spoke about before, 50% of our revenue is bowling, which is not subject to any cost of goods sold. And amusements is also a fixed number. So 75% of our revenue is not subject to any cost of goods sold. Now, we have seen some food and drink cost increases, and we continue to manage it closely, knowing that a 5% increase would impact GP pounds by £300,000, assuming that we did nothing in terms of menu re-engineering or in terms of price. Finally, we're also starting to see increases in the cost for new builds and refurbishments of circa 5%, but we continue to ensure we'll get our same strong return on investment, and I will go into more detail later on. All of the performance we've spoken about before drove record free cash in the period, with group adjusted operating cash flow of 30.7 million. Now, we have got a working capital benefit of 2.1 million with centre level bonuses. So those are accrued in the year. 25% of it is paid in the first half. So it's just being paid in a couple of days' time. The rest of it is paid in November. So we will have that working capital benefit until the end of the year, and it will probably increase as we move towards the end of the year, continue to accrue bonus. The group spent a total of 4.1 million on maintenance capex, including 1.4 million on pins on strings, and also 0.7 million on the installation of the solar panels I mentioned earlier. Net capex in total was 11.1 million. We spent an extra 1.2 on refurbs versus where we had before, with Glasgow, Springfield, Key, and Birmingham Rubery completed, as well as a rebrand of the AMF in Shrewsbury. At least a further four centres will be refurbished in the year. We've already completed two since the end of the half in Glasgow, Cope Bridge, and also in Bolton. And the returns on these are expected to continue to exceed the route hurdle rate of 33%. New centre capex, as you can see, is 5.8 million. That's in relation to both the new centres that opened in the half, so Hollywood Bowl Resorts World in Birmingham and also Harrow Puttstars, and also a significant amount of spend for the Belfast site, which opened during April. Given the strong trading period, our cash balance as at the end of April is 55.2 million. And in line with our capital allocation policy, the group is pleased to be able to reinstate the dividend, as Steve mentioned earlier, at 3 pence per share. Now, as a reminder of our capital allocation policy, just on the following slide, our priorities continue to be investing in our existing centres through maintenance capex, as well as our successful refurbishment process, the opportunity for new centres, as well as acquisitions. All of this provides growth opportunities in terms of profit and also further cash. And then we'll look to the further use of the free cash flow through special dividends if we have the ability to do so. The outlook for the rest of the year, we continue to look for opportunities for both acquisition and new centres, as well as refurbishments. And we're ready to take full advantage of those opportunities as they come along. We're pleased with performance to date, but we do expect a more modest growth in the summer due to increased foreign travel and like-for-like growth for the full year of mid to late teen double-digit growth versus FY19. Finally, during FY22, we continue with our successful capital deployment programme. We'll continue to open up new centres, invest in refurbishment, and also continue on solar panels and adding more indoor strength to the centres.
Thanks, Lawrence. On slide 14, we sort of lay out our growth strategy. And as we emerge from the pandemic, we did take the opportunity to review and refresh this strategy to ensure that it remained relevant for the post-COVID operating environment. Our strategic priorities can be summarised around three key initiatives. First one, investing in our estate, growing our business organically. Second, new site openings and strategic acquisitions. And thirdly, growing our business sustainably. And I'm really pleased with the progress that we've made on each during the half. We really look in our business. We've got a really unique, inclusive experience that appeals to a very wide demographic, and we've got a very low ticket price point. That puts us in a really strong position when there's a squeeze on consumer disposable income. And we saw that during the last recession. I was around during that period in sort of 2010, 2013, in the teeth of the last consumer recession. And we saw that our core customer group prioritised their leisure spending on an all-inclusive family entertainment experience. The market today, however, is slightly different in that there's been a proliferation of new experiential leisure offerings that are out there that weren't around during the last recession. And it's a much more competitive environment. And so it's really key that actually sales and service superiority remains at the forefront of what we're doing within our organisation and our business. And when you combine that with our unique product, that's a real differentiator that's out there. And despite the significant increase in demand that we experienced during the half, we actually still managed to grow the overall satisfaction levels of our customers by 5.5 percentage points versus 2019, with 91% of all of our customers leaving our venues satisfied with the experience. Looking at slide 16 and how we're using technology. We have made some real strides forward during the digital journey in the half. With the increased footfall, we have the unique opportunity to grow our already impressive database. Our database helps us in a number of ways. One, it helps us mitigate against more challenging trading conditions, like when the sun's shining, as well as providing us with a rich seam of information to help us increase the effectiveness of our digital advertising through customer match and improving our conversion rates and returns from digital marketing spend. Post-COVID, we saw a huge shift to online bookings. We improved the customer journey online through more investment on our website as a consequence, and as well as our back-end booking systems, where we simplified the inquiry and sales progress. And that's helped us drive quite significantly our web conversions as a result. We also upgraded the Wi-Fi in all our centres to improve the customer experience, as well as giving us the bandwidth to install other revenue-enhancing products like the Atlane order systems, as well as contactless amusement payment options that I'll touch on in the next slide. We've continued to roll out the in-centre digital signage initiative as part of our refurbishment programme. That gives us the ability to change the upsell prompts for food and drink as the day part progresses and the different customer groups that we have come into our centre changes during the times of the day. We've also continued the rollout of pins on strings, as Lawrence mentioned. This sort of cost-saving, capacity-enhancing technology is now in 34 of our centres. We've completed 7 installs so far this year, and we've got a further 9 planned for the rest of this year. So we've still got quite a lot of runway left to go, which is delivering returns ahead of the expectations. So despite the backdrop of increasing prices in food and beverage within hospitality, we chose to continue with the simplified menu that we launched post the lockdowns. Just keeping our food prices on key items, like the burgers and the high volume items, 15% below where they were in 2019. This was a customer-led decision born on the back of the positive feedback that we'd had from our customers and our guests. So whilst choice has undoubtedly been compromised, obviously by reducing the menu, we're actually able to deliver the food much more quickly with a higher level of consistency and at the new price point, actually deliver in line with our customers' expectations. We also have real price elasticity to help us soften the impact to margin of any further wholesale inflationary pressures. And to give our pricing a bit of context, there's a table on the bottom of that slide, which just shows how we compare versus other operators that we share the leisure parks with. We've refined the menu a little during the half as we look for continual improvement. We've added snacks and sharers to the lanes menu, and food revenue was actually up 8.4% versus the same period in 2019. Despite the significant drop in prices that we've put through, bar revenue has been up 23% versus H1 19. The performance for our amusement areas has been truly outstanding during the half, so revenue's up 43.6% versus the same period in 2019, with spend per game up on amusements 21.7%. With the increased demand that we had on our centres during the half, we did see wait times for lanes extended, which certainly helped drive the majority of the outperformance that we enjoyed in the amusement areas. As customers are waiting for lanes, they kill 5-10 minutes in the amusement areas and spending much more. We have also, however, made some big changes in our amusement areas to capitalise on the opportunity the increased demand presented. As part of the refurbishments, we look to rationalise space and increase amusement density. It's been a pound to play an amusement machine for the last 15 years. So inflation has therefore made it cheaper for customers to play a machine. Now, the good thing about that is more customers play more, but only if there's the right level of quality and machine density. We've added 220 new machines during the half. We've got a bit more detail later in the presentation with a case study of what an increased amusement area is worth to us. We've also done our best to remove as many barriers to play as possible, rolling out familiar payment options like the yellow NIAX boxes that you see on vending machines and car park ticket machines. And we've now got them on all our change machines, where you'll just go and tap your debit card for £10 or £20 coins, making it easier for customers to get access to coins. And we've installed them on all of our pool tables as well. So now 60% of all of the revenue from our pool tables goes through the NIAX technology. And that's given us the opportunity to take price. So from £1 to £1.25 to £1.75, depending on location, which is still actually great value for money for a two-player game. And we've got plans to roll out the NIAX boxes to other amusement machines where they're two-player, like air hockey, that kind of stuff, during the second half of this year. So looking at team, Hollywood Bowl is a people business. If we don't have the very best talent focused on delivering a fantastic experience for our customers, we won't be able to deliver on our growth ambitions. We've actually been able to recruit an additional 15% more team members than we had pre-COVID, and that's in a very competitive labour market. Hospitality team members don't have the ability to work from home. They don't have the ability to have the same flexible working arrangements to the same extent as their office workers. They don't have the ability to benefit from the reduction in travel costs and commute time saved that a lot of their office-based based counterparts have done. And the industry is losing talent as a consequence. It's therefore a really big focus for us to attract and retain top hospitality talent. We've refocused our efforts on team development. We've an industry-leading talent development program, affording all team members the opportunity to develop into senior leadership roles. And we've enrolled over 100 of our team members onto that program during the half. In addition to the 5.8% pay rise we gave to all our salary team, we introduced new bonus schemes paying out to all team members on the delivery of sales, service and environmental objectives. Our hourly paid team members have received over £450,000 in bonuses over the first 6 months of this year, and our centre management teams over £815,000. We're in the process of refreshing our employer brand using sales and marketing techniques that we've refined for customer acquisition to keep our team member pipeline strong. And we changed our employer support provider using a company better able to support our team wellbeing objectives. Looking at ESG, I wanted to give you a quick update on the performance versus the ESG targets we set ourselves for the year. We do take the role our centres play in their communities very seriously and work closely with special needs and concessionary groups to make our centres as accessible as possible to every part of the community. Over 1.5 million of concessionary discounts were redeemed in the half, and we extended the discount periods for this year to include all peak trading days in response to customer feedback. I've just talked you through the improvements that we've made on our objective for creating outstanding workplaces, but lay out the detail on the table for your reference. And I'm also delighted with the progress that we've made on our environmental initiatives. So 76% of the waste we generate was recycled in the half. Now that's been driven in the change by in the main by team behavioural change. It's a key performance objective supported by financial bonuses. On the next slide, I'll just lay out what we've been doing around our sustainability efforts. Eight centres now have solar arrays on their roof, completed three installations during the half, and we're on track to have 15 centres with solar by the end of 22. And that will give us the capacity to generate over 4.6 megawatt hours of electricity per year. And just to give those numbers a bit of context, the group used 18.2 megawatt hours during 2019. Each centre that's got the solar tech has the opportunity to generate 30% of the energy it needs, and then it feeds back to the grid the energy that it's over-generating. Paybacks on the tech are ahead of our expectations. Short to medium term, we're protected from the energy cost inflations, having hedged out at the end of 24, and we've actually been able to sell back to the grid at spot price the capacity that we no longer need due to the fact that we're generating more through solar. We also introduced an electric vehicle company car scheme for our regional support team, making full use of the government electric vehicle tax break, and we expect 32% of our business miles to be driven by electric vehicles in the year.
Thanks, Lee. So on to slide 22, our refurbishments have continued to pay back at market-leading rates. Now, we've spent the gain performance in those centres that have been invested in the last 12 months, up 13%, lineage up 17.8%. Like-for-like revenue growth is nearly 40% in these refurbishments, and these centres were already in the top 20 of our estate. As you can see from the graph, the ROIs continue to be above the 33%, and along with the three completed in H1, as I mentioned earlier, we will do at least a further four in H2. Our pipeline means we get to centres every 5 to 7 years, and we're also now working on rebranding all of our AMS centres to Hollywood Bowl, although some of the leases do need reviewing as part of that before we finalise them. One of the successes of our refurbishment programme is adapting based on our customers as well as, and really importantly, a constant review and ownership from our centre managers. They run the centres and therefore they provide the feedback on opportunities when it comes to refurbishment. It's not a centrally run scheme. As we've mentioned previously, the combination of the bar and diner areas provides not only increased space for amusements, but also marginal labour efficiencies. And as Steve mentioned earlier, a case study of one of those refurbishments is on slide 23. So Birmingham Rubery, I should have asked the question, who recognises the centre from these three pictures? Birmingham Rubery was a spend of £410,000, and it's a great example of how we continue to review space optimisation, ensuring our centre is set up for the customer in the best way. The combined bar and diner has seen growth in excess of 34%, like for like, whilst the larger amusement areas seen like-for-like growth of just under 50%, and this centre will pay back its investment in less than 1 year. We've identified a further 11 sites that could benefit from combined bar and diner and larger amusement areas, which we'll get to in the balance of this year and also into next year. Our centre pipeline on slide 24 continues to be strong. We've got a signed pipeline, as you can see on the slide, and there are four more centres close to signing, two of which we'd expect to open in the next 12 to 15 months. We're also ahead of terms and legals on a number of other sites, confident we'll hit the guided 14 to 18 before the end of FY24, and also we're now filling up FY2025. Now, it's important to note that lots of opportunities continue to come our way. The strong covenant and financial performance really helps, as well as landlords reassessing their tenant mix. However, we will continue to stay focused on only going for those quality opportunities and the best locations for our portfolio, as you can see from the most recent 9 openings on the next slide. Now, what this slide shows is the gross and net capex for the past 9 new centre openings. Now, they're in no particular order, so don't try and work them out, but you can try. But as you can see, quality is the key to our new centre openings, with a return on the net capital investment of over 45% for these openings. So that's 8.2 million net capex invested and 3.7 million EBITDA generated in their first 12 months. And they continue to grow their EBITDA post their first 12 months. Our new centre openings in FY22 have started well and are on track to deliver on their internal ROI targets.
Thanks. So looking at Puttstars briefly, since the creation of the concept and the opening of the first centre in 2020, it was brilliant to open the 4th Puttstars in Harrow during February. And with the 5th site due to be completed during the second half of this year, we'll have a really robust group of centres to continue testing and evolving the concept. All of the centres opened so far are trading in line with expectation. They're profitable and expected to contribute circa 1.2 million of EBITDA for FY22 on a pre-IFRS basis. The new brand is slowly gaining recognition in the markets that we operate in, and we are actually in the middle of a really large customer feedback project. So now we've been open for 12 months, we're able to really kick the tyres on the customer to find out what they value and what they don't, and what barriers we're putting in their way to stop them coming back a little bit sooner than they might, a bit like we did with the Hollywood Bowl business and brand when we started it. We've laid out here comparisons on spend per game versus bowl for context, although it is worth noting that bowling utilisation will always be much better than we could ever hope to achieve in the golf centres, just due to the very nature of the product. Their capacity, for example, with 27 holes of golf is similar to a 12-lane bowling centre. The smallest bowling centre that we operate is a 14-lane centre in Watford. Looking at international expansion on slide 28, international expansion has always been part of our growth strategy for a number of years, and over the last 3 years we've conducted a very thorough and extensive global search for suitable markets and targets. The work was hampered somewhat by the pandemic, but after a really successful reopening in the UK, we had the bandwidth to resume the negotiations that we'd started actually back in early 2019 with the owners of Splitsville and Stryker in Canada. The Canadian bowling market is really well established. It's resilient and a valued activity for a customer group that very closely mirrors the UK. Canada's a stable market with a liberal government and a well-educated population that have got a relatively high level of disposable income. Over 38 million people live in the country, 81% of the population is urban, and 90% of the entire population live within 100 miles of the US border. The bowling market in Canada is hugely fragmented and underinvested. There are 193 bowling centres in Canada, but there are only 4 operators that have got any scale, with the single largest operator having just 17 venues. All of them are privately owned businesses, other than 2 centres that are operated by the newly listed UK company Bowlero.
US.
We've acquired Tequin Holdings Limited. That consists of Splitsville and Stryker businesses. Splitsville is a group of 5 10-pin bowling centres, 2 of which are freehold, with a freehold value of circa $9 million Canadian dollars. Stryker is a small bowling equipment maintenance and new centre fit-out company. Now, that's interesting in that it serves the whole of the Canadian market. It's also got exclusive rights to the supply of the Canadian Brunswick bowling products and brings with it a really unique and detailed insight into every bowling operator in Canada. Splitsville hit all of the markers that we'd set when looking for international growth. It's in a market for us to move into that we believe will welcome our customer-led operating model, with obviously some local modification. It's using technology the way that we do. We know we can improve it through our digital marketing, CRM, and generally professionalising the systems. And they're all areas that we can add value to from afar. There's low downside risk to this acquisition. The business is profitable and freehold backed with really good medium to long-term growth potential. There's a well-established, experienced and motivated management team at the helm who are incentivized to scale the business over the next 3 to 5 years and have identified single site acquisitions and new center developments. The business will need some funding to top up the cash it already generates to deliver its plan, but not to the extent that it'll impact on any of the UK CapEx plans, new opening plans, or our ability to pay dividends. Pat Haggerty, the president and owner of the business, is staying for a minimum period of 3 years to lead the growth of the company. Pat's a really experienced CEO, and he's personally and financially incentivized to grow the business, requiring only strategic input from the UK-based team. The business has been bought on a cash-free and debt-free basis, and the purchase represents a 5.7 times multiple of their FY19 EBITDA. And it was made from cash on our balance sheet, with a payment schedule designed to retain the management team and incentivize them to grow the company. The team have got a really healthy pipeline of new centres, with one centre added during FY21 and one additional site in head-to-term stage, and a target of 2 new centres a year over the next 5 years. So in summary, we are confident about the medium to long-term potential for the group. Hollywood Bowl is the market leader with a high-quality, all-profitable estate. We continue to see strong demand for our offering and have a great value for money, low ticket price, with viewpoint unique experience. And with our universal appeal, we're not reliant on any one market. We have a well-defined and proven strategy for growth that we're continually refining, and we've seen a fantastic start to the year. And whilst we expect to see the like-for-like performance soften as we start trading against the post-COVID bounce months, we still expect double-digit growth for the year. And finally, we're excited about the acquisition of Splitsville and Stryker and the new long-term growth opportunities that this presents to the group.